This is PGI. Please stand by. We are about to begin. Good morning, and thank you for joining the Hospice New Zealand Palliative Care Lecture Series. Our thanks to Genesis Oncology Trust for their continued sponsorship, which allows us to bring you these lectures. Please be advised that today's call is being recorded, September 1, 2016. Our speaker today is Scott Miller. Scott is Chief Executive of Volunteering New Zealand. We are delighted he can join us today to present on this important area and the changing trends in volunteering. Thank you, Scott. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for getting up early if this is beyond your morning wake-up time. For me, I've been up four times already this morning with my 10 month-old son going through his third tooth. So we are well awake in Wellington, New Zealand. So look, I'm here this morning on behalf of Hospice New Zealand to talk about the changing trends in volunteering. There's some significant challenges and opportunities for the sector, for the volunteer-involving organizations that bring in and engage volunteers, and more generally for the volunteers themselves. So thank you for being a part of this conversation this morning. I'd like to just introduce our sector first, and then I'll go through a little bit about Volunteering New Zealand before I speak about some of the hospice-related specific topics about volunteers and volunteering, some trends from a recent survey that we undertook with 1,500 registered charities on volunteering, and then a little bit more about some of the demography of volunteering now and into the future. So slide two indicates a little bit about the size of our sector. We're a workforce of about 1.2 million volunteers, which is slightly up on some research from 2004 that had us at about 1.1 million. 4.9% of GDP is our economic contribution if the value of volunteers was taken into account. That's roughly equivalent to the construction industry. So as a sector, we're quite sizable. 90% of not-for-profits rely solely on volunteers. So we still have a very strong ethos of sleeves up, number eight wire, let's get it done, let's sort the problem out between ourselves before we think about getting too structured and bureaucratic involving staff. Internationally, we're fourth most volunteering country in the world. We follow Bhutan, the United States, and a Central Asian country, Central, yeah, so something like Turkmenistan. So we're pretty competitive. Last year, we were fifth in the world. So we've got a very good culture in New Zealand, but like anything, we can do better. So that's one of the roles of Volunteering New Zealand, which I can describe to you a little bit further in slide three. Volunteering New Zealand is the voice of volunteering in New Zealand. We have three overarching purposes. We promote volunteering, the benefits, the pursuit of volunteering for both volunteers and the organizations that engage them, primarily through National Volunteer Week, Student Volunteer Week, International Managers of Volunteer Day, and the UN-led International Volunteer Day in December. We support volunteering. We have some best practice guidelines for volunteer-involving organizations. We have competencies for managers of volunteers. We have an annual conference that I'll tell you about at the end of the conference. We provide research and training and education like we're doing today. And then we advocate for effective volunteering with central and local government. At the moment, we've just submitted on the Fire and Emergency New Zealand Bill, and we're aware of several other bills going before Parliament. One that is stuck somewhere in the middle is the Police Cost Recovery Amendment Bill, which looks to charge volunteer organizations to vet volunteers, which we're obviously very strongly against. Slide four. Volunteering New Zealand is an incorporated society made up of the 17 National Volunteer Centres. They're not branches of Volunteering New Zealand. They're separately governed and managed. and approximately 65 national volunteer-involving organisations, including Hospice New Zealand, IHC, Plunkett, Red Cross, primarily major national volunteer-involving organisations. Slide five. I've been Chief Executive at Volunteering New Zealand for about 1.5 years now. I also chair an NGO network of community organisations, and collectively we come under a banner called Comm Voices. It's an entity made up of chief executives of the sector that's primary purpose is to really hold government to account, and we do that through this independent organisation so that we don't, in our own individual organisations such as Volunteering New Zealand, be seen to be lobbying or being seen to be too critical of government and potentially jeopardise our own funding. So we do it through this external organisation called Comm Voices. I am a former speech-language therapist, primarily with people with an intellectual disability. My immediate previous role was with Charities Services, which is part of the Department of Internal Affairs, looking at the governance and management of registered charities, all 27,000 of them. I've been a corporate working for the likes of ExxonMobil in the oil and gas sector, a teacher, and not to mention a hospice volunteer at Te Amanga. Slide six. So what I'd like for listeners this morning to come away with at the end of today's presentation is an understanding of some of the trends in volunteering and to understand some of the challenges and opportunities for more effective volunteering within your hospice or palliative care environment. Slide seven. I'm going to refer to this theme of volunteer mobilisation several times during the presentation in different words. To me, volunteer engagement is shifting, and there's those organisations that are shifting with the trend, knowing that the way that volunteers choose to engage with organisations is a lot more episodic, a lot more individual, a lot more focused on the individual than in the past. Historically, volunteers came together because they'd identified a common community-led benefit that needed some extra support. That's the old days, the good old days. So it's deeper than just a strategy and a methodology. If you're going to do it as an organisation right these days, it absolutely depends on the philosophy, values and structures of your organisation to make sure that those volunteers have a direct line of sight with the purposes of the organisation and with what they intend and what they see as their reasons for being a volunteer. The days of a warm body in a volunteer organisation, more the merrier, is no longer the way that volunteering takes place. Slide eight. As part of my research for this morning's presentation, I was able to find a little bit of research, thanks to Rachel at Hospice New Zealand, that talks about the Asclepian tradition, and this is compared with indifference to the Hippocratic tradition. And so in a critical reflection on palliative care philosophy, researchers consider the Asclepian tradition as fitting volunteering in hospices as opposed to the Hippocratic tradition. In the Asclepian tradition, the contribution of community volunteers does not lie in the expert symptom relief characteristic of the Hippocratic approach. Rather, volunteers have much more to offer: quality time, attention and care, which is in line with the Asclepian tradition of being there. What is at stake for each patient and what can be done becomes clear through a quality encounter and relational attunement. Slide nine. So the next series of slides is going to be about some research that we conducted last year. We're in the process of undertaking comparative research at this very moment with that same data set of registered charities, so we look forward to seeing what's changing and what's staying the same. However, from last year, we were relatively encouraged to know that the primary reason for engaging volunteers remains to achieve organisational goals, about 83%. Quite reaffirming is the fact that only 31% of organisations are using volunteers as a cost-saving mechanism. And engaging the community, which is the old day of using volunteers, is to bring us together to build social capital, to build our networks and our community well-being, is only about 45%. So really, it's becoming a lot more of a transaction than it has perhaps been in the past. Slide 10. As part of my research for this morning, I also looked at some of the benefits of involving volunteers with patients. Research suggests that patients in a hospice or a palliative care environment benefit from the practical and emotional support of a volunteer. They report high levels of satisfaction with services, and one study, they were found to live much longer. All very consistent with the Asclepian tradition of volunteer engagement in these environments. Slide 11. Not-for-profits, or the 1,500 that we surveyed, are not using technology very effectively. Only 5 out of 10 say that they have a very good engagement with technology, whether that's webinars, social media, the other tools and instruments available to ensure that volunteer engagement is as effective as possible, and that includes databases, rosters, communication about news and events. These are things that we'd like to see increasing as the sector professionalises and matures a little bit more. Only 34% are using online tools for recruitment, but encouragingly, usage increases with the size of the organisation and the number of volunteers involved. Slide 12. Online recruitment is through existing organisational channels, and by that we mean by your website or your social media. So having a good community presence is obviously going to be a determinant on your ability to attract new volunteers. Our survey found that technological solutions such as online portals provided by the volunteer centres to opportunities listed on their websites, or the newcomer to the volunteer market, Seek Volunteer, are still relatively underutilised compared to you using your own organisation's website to broadcast what volunteer roles you are seeking to fulfil at the moment. Slide 13. Interestingly, only 26% of organisations are reimbursing volunteers for their expenses. Those that were covering costs for travel and pre-approved spending were things such as transport or mobile phones, simple things like that. It would be encouraging to see a lot more organisations considering the economic cost of volunteering, especially with marginalised communities such as older people or students, where their finances are inherently a lot more tighter. If we're going to be looking at ways of increasing and encouraging new volunteers to volunteer with our organisations, it's also, in my opinion, understating the true cost of delivering a service when we don't take into account the cost of that volunteer. And that's another theme that I hope will come through today, is that volunteering is not free, it's not cost neutral, and if you want to do it right, it does require an investment. Slide 14. Recruitment is an ongoing issue within the sector. On average, 55% of charities have experienced difficulties in the last 12 months, felt least by organisations with the fewest volunteers. The repetition of lack of time as a case for not being able to attract volunteers tends to become a self-fulfilling prophecy when overused. So we'd like to encourage people to challenge how people respond to the idea of not being able to volunteer. As you'd be aware, the consumption of Netflix tends to suggest that people have time. It's just about priorities. The fact that it's hard to find proper volunteer roles comes back to my original slide where I spoke about organisational philosophy. How does the organisation see volunteers is going to have a very strong determinant on how they choose to engage that volunteer in roles that are both meaningful for the volunteer and the organisation. And the same goes for the passion. Not many volunteers I know want to see themselves as a second-tier staff at an organisation sweeping the floors or doing the jobs that the paid staff don't see as something as important or contributing to that line of sight. We're going to talk about further about how to engage younger people further in the presentation. Slide 15. So volunteer programs only succeed when volunteers are motivated to take on the position that needs to be filled. We need to accommodate the position to the individual, and we need to build positions that volunteers want to undertake. It might be easiest to think of a volunteer these days as a customer. Would you offer your customer that same sense of satisfaction or dissatisfaction and expect them to stay around? They're easily going to move on to another retailer if it was a shopping experience, as they are with a volunteering experience if their needs are not being met. As I said earlier, quite simply, if we think that they're going to volunteer in your organisation just because of its reputation or because the community benefit is so great, chances are they won't stay around because they're not getting their immediate needs fulfilled. Slide 16. So if you're going to assign the right volunteer to the right task, success will become self-fulfilling. And a great way of reducing the mismatch there is by spending a decent amount of time screening interviews and interviewing volunteers to make sure that you are both on the same page. It can be very difficult to exit a volunteer that doesn't align with the organisation, but at the same time it can be quite frustrating and disruptive for the culture of the organisation if you're bringing in volunteers that keep exiting because their needs and their expectations are not being met. Slide 17. Fortunately, the ability to retain volunteers is not so pressing. Obviously, time pressures is still a challenge across the New Zealand sector and internationally. The UK, Australia, Canada, the States, most Western societies are saying the same thing about engaging volunteers. In Australia, for example, they're saying that volunteer hours are diminishing quite considerably, and it is becoming quite a concern. Fortunately for New Zealand, we're not quite dealing with that same number of volunteers decreasing at the moment. Time pressures, again, you know, it's the most common reason against volunteering. Interestingly, from our survey, age and health problems and lack of motivation and commitment. Well, no, from lack of motivation and commitment, you can tell that probably wasn't the right role being offered to that volunteer. Slide 18. So in the short run, and you see this with event volunteering, such as the Cricket World Cup or the Rugby World Cup, or after the Canterbury earthquakes, in the short run, most volunteers will agree to do anything that needs doing. For the hospice, that might be the collection days on the street. However, research has proven in the long run, most volunteers will obviously prefer to do work that they find satisfying. Now, I take my hat off to Sam Johnson and the Student Volunteer Army in the respect that they've really been able to transform what was a once-off event, or several in the case of Christchurch, into a sustainable, ongoing program that still brings in 2,000 students year on year. That's unheralded. It's remarkable for the respect that they're obviously thinking about what do the students want and how can they provide that. So they're an absolute exemplar of the transformation of short-run volunteering into long-term and the benefits ensure that that organisation has got a long and sustainable future. Slide 19. For volunteering to be sustainable, there needs to be interdependence between the needs of the volunteer and those of the organisation. As I say, it's important to understand why people volunteer and ensure that their motivations are taken into account when allocating roles and planning support or development. Okay, so we're going to move on to some general trends in the voluntary sector. These are experienced across the sector, regardless of whether you're in health and disability, sport, environment, you name it, we're all experiencing it across the membership and across the wider sector. So we'll move to slide 21, which is expectations. So some Canadian research reports that advances in technology, shifting demographics and increased resource pressures mean today's organisations must re-evaluate all facets of their volunteer policies and practices and ultimately embrace different approaches. The research found that there are gaps between the opportunities organisations are providing and the meaningful volunteer experience, such as many people are looking for group activities, but few organisations have the capacity to offer them. I tend to look at the BNZ example as this sort of case where you've got potentially 5,500 people trying to go out volunteering yesterday, but it's actually quite difficult to try and find meaningful work for 10, 15 volunteers to do just over one day. I take my hat off to those organisations that can be creative in offering engagement for that number of volunteers. But on the whole, a lot of organisations are struggling with that ability to offer group volunteering. Organisations are also expected to clearly define the roles and boundaries of volunteers, but at the same time, many volunteers want the flexibility to initiate what they have to offer. For example, to create their own volunteer opportunity, or to come in when they believe it's suitable for their own time and when it suits them. Obviously, that's not really that useful for organisations where you've got to be somewhere at a certain time, perhaps picking somebody up to take them to an appointment, dropping off a meal. These are some of the challenges of our society as we become a lot more on call and on demand. So episodic volunteering. The idea of volunteers contributing or volunteering on a regular schedule of, let's say, meeting once a month or once a week between the hours of 7 and 9 in the evening for the local fire brigade or whatever it may be, is absolutely the old days. These days, people are more interested in checking in and then checking out. Switching from the long-term habitual, I'll be there, you can count on me, to the short-term episodic, knowing that you're not going to have them every time, but when you do have them, they're there for that primary reason of being a volunteer. So higher impact becomes a bit more of a priority than the idea of knowing that you've got a slow burn process going on. However, there are some benefits to episodic volunteering, and that is that even short-term volunteers connect organisations with more people in their community who have the potential to be ambassadors and or donors. These new volunteers can create access to more skills, new energy and or ideas. And the organisation builds its capacity to become a bit more of a temporary agency for skills, connecting volunteers with opportunities as appropriate. A statistic that I didn't mention earlier was the fact that as well as 1.2 million volunteers being relatively static, the number of hours that they've given has reduced by approximately 42%. So we've still got roughly the same number of volunteers, but 42% reduction in hours is absolutely critical. So it's a great thing to see volunteer organisations being able to respond as much as possible to these changing dynamics of how volunteering takes place. Slide 23. Professionalism is pervasive. Where once it was deemed important to keep tasks simple so that as many people as possible could be put to work, it has since become more important to screen potential workers carefully because only certain people are now seen as capable of performing at a high enough level. Ultimately, some or most tasks become so demanding in their complexity that it is seen that only professional or paid workers can perform them adequately. We're seeing that obviously through the expectations of volunteers, the fact that they're now having to sign, and it is good practice, volunteer engagement letters, the fact that central government is proposing and imposing regimes through their contracting and reporting arrangements, which are having an effect on how we count and measure volunteers, and the fact that I heard recently, not that it's written into law, but that one ministry is proposing that police checks become across the whole of the organisation. So there's just this slow, gradual shift towards the professionalisation of our sector. Now, the good side of that comes through the legislation at the Health and Safety at Work Act, where volunteers are starting to get some recognition, at least through this piece of legislation, as having the same rights as paid staff when it becomes a health and safety topic. We'd like to see that extended into some of the same rights extended to employees through the Employment Relations Act when there's a dispute or a conflict that currently the law is silent on. So we're looking at how we can support the sector when conflicts do arise, as much as they do in paid employment situations where MB will support paid staff, but they won't support volunteer staff. Slide 24. There are other challenges, naturally, to the relationship between paid staff and volunteers. Staff have concerns about the skills of volunteers, the management of the task and the boundaries that are expected from the volunteer and the impact this may have on the quality of care, and the position ambiguity where volunteers are seen somewhere between paid staff and a friend. So these challenges mean that, especially in a hospice environment, these can raise concerns for why staff believe that volunteers should or should not be involved in the organisation. Now, a simple question to ask is how many of your staff, paid staff, in your organisation can explain why volunteers are engaged? If you can ensure that as many of your staff can understand that, then my bet is that you're going to have a much more successful volunteer-involving program than you are than those organisations that don't really know why staff are involved. Okay, slide 25. Demographics is quite an interesting topic for the sector. Obviously, we talk a lot about youth of today, Generation Y and Z and baby boomers, and so I'm going to spend a little bit of time going through each demographic in respect to volunteering. So slide 26. The silent generation, generally referred to those over 70, prefer to fully understand the mission and history of the organisation in order to determine if there will be a mutually enjoyable experience between the volunteer and the organisation. The desired communication platform is a phone call. So that face-to-face or that personal contact is going to be vital, and a recognition strategy to acknowledge is that we value, desire, and need their knowledge and experience. Okay, so we're dealing with a population that wants to be involved, but they've obviously got to have that culture fit a lot stronger, and the results are that you're going to see them retain that sense of commitment and consistency that you won't see in the younger generations that are a lot more episodic. Slide 27, boomers. Now, apart from desiring to serve as property brokers and mentors in Auckland, a significant proportion of boomers also see volunteering as an opportunity to feel significant and to give back to the community. We understand that a recognition strategy for the boomers is to let them know that we value their time by letting them show the organisation how they can support through that mentoring or advisory sort of capacity. Slide 28, Generation X. These are mid-30s to early 50s. They desire to accomplish a strong work-life balance, and they value and have the aspirations of their personal goals. They want their contributions to be useful to the entire cause of the organisation, the line of sight, and reminding them how they support that line of sight is going to be crucial. They don't just want to be assigned busy work that seems to be wasting their effort. As we've described earlier, these people are going to be more of your episodic volunteers. They have a lot to give. They've got relationships, connections. They're building their careers generally, so they're in a chance to leverage some of that now. And the recognition strategy to a Generation X volunteer is to suggest that they're being the change in the world for at least one individual. Slide 29. Generation Y, this is late teens to mid-30s. They desire to be communicated with electronically through websites such as Seek Volunteer. They want to be led, not managed. They want to be sold on the big picture, the idea of what they're doing. They want to work in an environment where teamwork and collaboration is fostered. They're also starting to look at skill acquisition for their CVs. So again, it's going to be vital to telling them how they will benefit from the volunteer opportunity and aligning that with what their potential for future employment is going to be. Slide 30. Generation Z, interestingly, are a lot like the silent generation, the over 70s. There's a regression in the sense that they see families as of immense value and importance again. They're seeking opportunities that will build expertise, something that will lead to some type of training or certification. They're all embracing of social media, as you know, and if you're going to expect volunteers to engage with your organisation, this is going to be the medium that they're going to want to see you use. There's not going to be much hope of you engaging with them if your website isn't current, that you don't have a social media presence, and are available to communicate on their level, so text and immediate responses. If you don't have a response back within 24 hours, chances are they've already moved on to another organisation. They like to see themselves as change makers, both locally and globally. So you specifically, as we say, they're looking to be a tribe that makes a difference. They don't want to just be a happy gang plodding along. Canadian research suggests that barriers to youth and youth volunteering include not being asked or unsure how to become involved, or feeling that their opinions and insights are not valued, respected, or taken into account. Another organisation that Volunteering New Zealand has a member recently had me speak, and they recognised that their average age of their membership was something around the low 60s to mid-60s, and it's quite difficult to engage younger people when their average age is a lot different to their own. Young people like to volunteer in other environments with other young people, generally supporting other young people. So when you have that mismatch of organisational demographics where it's heavily weighted in one end relative to another, then it's going to be very challenging to change. Obviously the best strategy is to have a selection across the spectrum of ages and stages of demographics. So slide 32, As I said earlier, they want to reach out and make a difference. They want to obtain new skills and to have fun and meet people. So, slide 33, coming to the end of the presentation. I hope that you've had an opportunity through this time this morning to understand some of the trends in volunteering and to explore what are some of the challenges and opportunities for making more effective volunteering within the hospice and palliative care environment. The take home that I'd love for everyone to remember is that in the short run, most volunteers will agree to do anything. In the long run, most volunteers will prefer to do the work that they find satisfying. And I'd like to call your attention to the fact that we'll be talking about all of this plus much, much more on slide 35 in our national annual conference in Wellington. We've got early bird pricing for another week. We've got speakers from the UK and Australia and New Zealand talking about successful and effective volunteering through a range of different stories and types of engagement, workshops, Petra Kucha, keynotes. It's going to be an excellent day, and we've got masterclasses the following day, so if you like, more information is on our website. Thank you very much for your time and attention this morning. I look forward to any questions you may have from this morning's presentation.